Have you seen Chuck Norris lately? He's still kicking butt and staying active well into his 80s. What's even more shocking is he looks more jacked than ever and seems to have more energy than guys half his age. And it's all thanks to Morning Kick, a revolutionary new daily drink from Roundhouse Provisions that combines ultra-potent greens like spirulina and kale with probiotics, prebiotics, collagen, and even ashwagandha. Just mix with water, stir, and enjoy. Unlike other green drinks out there, this one tastes exactly like strawberry lemonade and has hundreds of five-star reviews. Go to roundhouseprovisions.com/save44 for up to 44% off your regular priced order. Plus, every purchase is backed by a 90-day money-back guarantee. So if you want to experience smoother digestion, a boost of energy, and just an overall healthier body, then go to roundhouseprovisions.com/save44 today. These statements have not been evaluated by the Food and Drug Administration. This product is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease. Results can vary.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week, and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Good morning and welcome to the Jaguar Report podcast, episode 103. My name is Justin.
Sir.
Joined by my co-host, John Shipley. John, I was feeling great at OTAs. I had just gotten back from a trip to New York to visit some family, and then it was a gorgeous day outside. And then after I ate dinner on Monday, I felt the subway sickness coming on. I must have picked something up, so I'm feeling pretty under the weather today, so you're going to have to do a little bit of carrying, more than even usual. But how are you doing, John?
I wouldn't say carry ever. I'll be honest. I'm a car guy. I went to Boston like 2 years ago, and the subway was obviously how we got around. I'm a car guy. I want to be in control of how I'm getting there.
My favorite part about going to New York now is easily the people watching. And the subway is definitely one of the best spots for it. I mean, it's nice to be able to just like eat somewhere outside and watch people go by. Man, the people watching is so good. But yeah, that's my favorite part of going on the subway, and that's pretty much about it. I mean, you're using a car in the city? So you're just Ubering everywhere?
I'd rather do that. Yeah, I would rather own a car in New York City than
Okay. Well, what about subway versus bus? If you had to choose between those two,
take a bus. You're on the ground. You feel like I feel like it's like the sewer people, you know, like uprising. You know, like you ever watch Futurama?
No, I need to though. I heard good things.
It is like the one-eyed girl. Like her whole family lives down there. Like she's not a mutant. She's just from the sewers. The whole civilization. Nah, I'm with the above grounds. I'll take an Uber.
It's a funny experience. I don't think I could be in a subway like for a whole year and like live in the city. I'm happy with the city that we live in, which is like more of a sprawling town than anything.
Which Jaguar would you most want to figure out public transportation with? Since this is a Jaguars focused podcast,
obviously. Probably Foyer Louicon, just because he's Yale graduate. I mean, I assume he graduated. Maybe he just went there for 3 years. But he went to Yale, and he's kind of like the quarterback of the defense. I feel like he's got the smarts for it. You got to have a good sense of direction. I feel like Foyer usually has a good sense of direction on the field. So I'd assume that he'd be able to get me home on a subway.
Well, I went to the Yale of Florida, so I don't.
No, you didn't.
Need a fancy Ivy League pick. The Yale of Central Florida. The Yale of Orange County.
Oh, my gosh.
I would go to a former Jaguar and pick Taven Bryan and build, like, a Flintstone-style car. That's my
It's just like you're moving on rocks, basically.
Yeah, more or less. With that said, our biggest episode yet, man. 103.
103. Biggest win. How's it feel? Yeah.
It's good, man. I feel like we're building some good momentum. Jaguars offseason is winding down. They finished their last OTAs, and then next week they will have a three-day mini camp, which, you know, Doug Peterson's entire MO in the last couple of years has been give more or less half the roster, if not more, mini camp off, like all the veterans and the key players and stuff. So, like, practice squad players and rookies and some second-year players will stick around for a three-day mini camp. But it's basically just rookie mini camp for 3 days. So it's I'm going to be out there every day, but I cannot tell you anything we will learn from Jaguars mini camp. So for me, for all intents and purposes, the Jaguars offseason practices are over. This was the last time we're going to see, like, the entire 90-man roster. Like, Trevor Lawrence won't be out there next week. You know what I'm saying? Right. So this past Monday was our last chance to see them. It was their seventh OTA. Well, again, it is an OTA practice. It's, you know, ball caps and T-shirts and shorts and Mac Jones dancing. Like, that video of Mac Jones, that is OTAs. You know, like, yeah. That's
every single beat person's, like, big, like, final takeaway. It's just like, oh, Mac Jones is having a good time. That kind of, like, shows you the level of OTAs.
Mac Jones doesn't hate his life anymore.
Hey, you said it, not me.
Dude, how bad was it in New England, dude? He seems genuinely like he's somebody who is, like, it's like the end of Shawshank Redemption, and he's just, like, back, you know, like, freedom after decades and decades. He seems genuinely having the time of his life. Even outside of that highlight or whatever, like, he is generally seemed, like, super happy and stuff, like, throughout this entire offseason. Like, it seems like he's gelled well with, you know, their personalities.
Yeah, I think everyone's kind of enjoying the show, too. It's funny seeing him do the – whatever that drill is where you kind of, like, land on the – pad
and drill
right after, and someone, like, a coaching staff member, like, threw a ball at him playfully as he was wrapping it up. And so, like, it's not just him, like, kind of, like, looking like a fool by himself out there. Everyone's kind of enjoying it. And yeah, you would think that Belichick would be kind of, like, the reason that his whole stint in New England didn't go very well, because, like, oh, he's coming from Bama, he has experience with Nick Saban, so you would think it's not going to be too bad of a transition for him. But I feel like really where he didn't have a good time was just dealing with the offensive coaches, which is fair, because they had Matt Patricia and Joe Judge being, what, co-coordinators.
Yeah.
Yeah, I wouldn't be having a very good time in that situation either.
And then Bill O'Brien, too. That's not to mention, like, the lack of, like, offensive firepower, too. You know, like, I went on record saying I never thought Mac Jones was, like, a superstar quarterback. I think he can be a serviceable one as long as he's developed correctly. I think I had, like, a second round grade on him coming out of Alabama, and I'd more or less probably, you know, stand by that. But it does seem like the Mac Jones rehabilitation project is off to a good start in Jacksonville. Yeah. Otherwise, from OTAs, Doug Peterson was asked about some guys in the 2023 draft class taking a step forward this year. Anton Harrison is pretty much the only one who actually played last year. Everybody else, like, played a little bit here and there. Like, Parker Washington had a few starts. Antonio Johnson had a few splash plays, but nobody really played other than Anton. And, of course, Doug Peterson, when talking about guys who could take a step this year, named more or less the entire class that is still left in Jacksonville. But
it was almost like he went one by one through the draft
order. Yeah. He did, you know, unprompted, say that Parker Washington is somebody who has stood out this offseason. He didn't say any of the other guys that he was like, have had a great offseason or anything. Like, it seemed like he gave Parker Washington the most praise. I mean, I feel like you and I have talked about it before, but we at the point where, as long as he doesn't have, like, a disastrous training camp, which I wouldn't expect he would, you know, he had a solid training camp last year, that Parker Washington could be, like, a lock to be, like, not the fifth receiver on the depth chart per se, but, like, the fifth receiver in the room, because we already know four of them in Gabe Davis, Christian Kirk, Brian Thomas Jr., and Devin Duvernay are making the team. Right. Could Parker Washington be considered a lock to be the fifth as long as he has, like, a ho-hum training camp?
Yeah, I think right now the fifth and sixth spots, I would assume that Parker Washington and Josh Cephas are going to get them. I think they definitely value special teams on those spots, and so, like, Parker, I don't know, like, how much special teams he really plays besides returner, and they've got, like, two or three returners in front of him. And then Cephas, like, not that he can't play special teams, but, like, Tim Jones definitely could play special teams. And then they definitely like Elijah Cooks' body type. And so it would be a little bit tougher for Cephas. But, yeah, I think based on the way that Parker is practicing, I mean, obviously, if Peterson is going to mention it too and kind of validate us, then, yeah, I think he's the front runner right now for that fifth spot.
Yeah, I think so too. He's had a great spring. Obviously, like, it's hard to not have a good spring in many ways, but there are some guys who haven't, and, you know, I'm not trying to be overly negative, but there are some guys who haven't, like, I'm not going to be like, yeah, they've looked awesome this spring. Like, just not everybody does, you know. Some guys just, like, look noticeably different, and he's definitely looked, you know, I think the part, you know, he's looked like a mini Christian Kirk out there, just that explosiveness, that ability to get open, you know, get separation consistently, and then good hands. He has shown all of that. And it seems like him and Trevor have built a little bit, you know, of a connection. So he's definitely been somebody who I think his stock is, you know, shooting up as they move into the main part of training camp, which I'll be honest, I didn't enter this offseason thinking that would be the case. I thought he'd be, you know, sixth round pick, and going into his second year, they've added to the receiver room. He's actually going to have to fight for a spot. And after what we've seen this spring, like, that's the impression he's made on me, that I'm less inclined to think that he has to fight for a spot. And it really could be between, like, Tim Jones, Elijah Cooks, Cephas, and anybody else that, you know, they potentially could take a step forward. Because there are other undrafted free agent receivers. I know David White tore his ACL in a non-contact injury. Wayne Ruby is obviously hurt and on now on the team's IR list. But there's a few other guys, that undrafted guys they have out there, who have made some flashes here and there. So I definitely think the sixth spot will be the one that's most tightly contested for. I mean, could they carry seven again, you think? It was kind of wild when they carried seven last year. Yeah. Could they do it again, you think?
I would say if they do, it's just because they don't want the same thing to happen last year where, like, Zay gets hurt. And then, especially when Christian gets hurt, obviously, then their room is kind of toast. But I think maybe if they're just a little bit scared about depth because of what happened last year, then they'll carry seven. But I would guess that they go back to six this year.
All right. So they can keep two out of three. Tim Jones, Cephas, and Elijah Cooks. Who do you think they would keep?
I think they would keep Cephas. I think he's had that good of a camp so far. And I feel like, yeah, Tim Jones has, like, an important role on special teams. And we've been pro Tim Jones on this podcast. But
Tim Jones.
Yeah, exactly. but, like, special teams shouldn't be, like, necessarily the reason that you keep a guy over a new body who could potentially develop into more. Because I feel like – I don't think Cephas will ever be, like, one of the greatest UDFA evers, but I feel like he could be maybe the best UDFA for the Jaguars in their history, because they've had, I think, Allen Hurns, James Robinson, and Keelan Cole are probably the most notable names. And they all had pretty productive careers in Jacksonville, but none of them played more than 4 years. And so if Cephas is able to actually, I think he could carve out, like, a tertiary role as, like, a reliable possession receiver. And so maybe he's able to play enough to get a second contract. I think there's, like, an actual path toward that happening. And I think they would much rather, like, keep Tim Jones on the practice squad and risk another team scooping him up than they would want to put Cephas on the practice squad and risk a different team picking him up.
So say they carry seven receivers, which of Tim Jones or Elijah Cooks do you think they would keep? And they would obviously risk losing one.
I would guess that they're going to keep Tim Jones. I feel like Elijah Cooks, they mostly like the idea of him. And he's definitely had some flashes. Like, I think he's definitely worth keeping around, even if it's just on the practice squad. But I feel like they mostly liked him for his body type, because they didn't have a lot of those bigger bodies last year. And now that they have Gabe Davis and Brian Thomas, there's not as much of a need for that. And so I think if they go seven, it makes sense to, like, keep two young guys and Parker Washington and Josh Cephas, and then, like, your better special teams player and Tim Jones, because like, I feel like the biggest thing that Cooks had to offer was his body type, and now that's not as valuable as it was a year ago for the Jags.
Yeah, I was actually gonna say the same thing. I was kind of hoping you'd say the opposite, so I'm panting a little bit. Made all the points. I will say, when it comes to Elijah Cooks, so my goal, Gus, one of my long-term goals is to write a book and get it published when I'm done covering the Jaguars about all the dumb and insane things I've seen while on the beat of Florida's team.
Are you writing them down to remember?
Buddy.
Because you should.
buddy.
Okay, okay. Yeah. Just like, yeah. I didn't want you to wake up in 10 years and be like, what happened at that Urban Meyer practice?
No, I have the memory of an elephant, my friend.
Okay, good.
With that said, there will be an excerpt with one of these said receivers thrown somewhere in there. You got to wait for the book to be released, but a nice little nugget. But it should be a good fight between, I think, the three of them, if not, like I said, more undrafted guys, I think, could potentially. Because once training camp happens, you know, it really sets the stage. Quick question. Can I tell you two undrafted free agents who have lasted longer than 4 years?
Like in the NFL?
With the Jags.
No, because I think those guys have lasted the longest. Unless there's there was some linebacker who was 5 years, I think.
Andrew Wingard.
Oh, wow. I completely forgot about him.
And Trey Herndon, my friend. Mr. Consistency. Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
Blunt. I guess I was the only thing about offense for some reason.
They have a good track record with undrafted free agents. I'm not sure how good it is compared to the rest of the NFL. I should probably look at that one day.
Yeah.
It's not going to be today.
Okay, so to readjust the take, I guess, I think he could be a Trey Herndon type player, Josh Cephas.
I think that's a big win, dude. Like, if you can get an Andrew Wingard, a Jaguar lifer who's a reliable depth guy, I think that's a home run.
Yeah, for sure. And so I think there's a path to that happening, is all I'm trying to say. I'm not trying to, it's definitely a bit of a premature take, considering we've seen two weeks of practices of him.
No, buddy, you're talking to me. Josh Cephas guy. If I recall correctly, actually, I was getting laughed at by a certain co-host at practices a couple weeks ago about my affinity for the player. And now you're all in. Yeah, now you're all in. What's the deal, my friend?
I don't remember. I feel like it was more of laughing with than laughing at. But okay. If that was the case, then I was wrong. I think Cephas is a nice player and a player that I'm trying to buy stock in.
I'm very sensitive and probably just misremember the entire thing, but I accept your apology.
That's a guy who says he has a memory of an elephant.
Okay, I remember somebody laughing. It might not have been you, but I think you were standing nearby, so you're getting lumped in with the
people. All right. That's fine.
You pick the crowd that you hang out with. I'm just saying.
All right. I would say my biggest takeaway from Monday's practice specifically was more so something from the coaching pressers and something on the field, which is kind of rare. But I thought Heath Farwell really hyped up Keelan Robinson, and specifically not just as a returner, but also as an offensive player too. I mean, he said he's an elite returner and this and that. But then at the end of his kind of spiel on Robinson, he said the offensive guys were on board. They liked him as well, catching the ball in the backfield and doing some of the stuff he does. And so I just – when he was drafted, I know he was a running back out of Texas who played returner, but then I kind of viewed it as, oh, the Jaguars just drafted a kick returner. But I don't think that Robinson is just that. I got to kind of readjust my expectations. And I think that he could actually carve out a little bit of a role as kind of a third down back for the Jags perhaps. And I kind of was expecting the Jaguars to find a running back for that role this offseason, whether it was a late round draft pick or potentially a cheap veteran to be kind of a trustworthy guy on third downs to either catch passes or a pass block. Mostly because of Doug Peterson's past. I mean, maybe it was just a Philly thing, but when he was with the Eagles, I feel like he had four different scat backs that he had in a rotation. And so I think Tank and Travis have the ability to catch a swing pass, but they're not, pass catching isn't really their forte. And so I think it's interesting that the Jags now have a guy in there where that's kind of his forte as a running back. And so I would maybe it was just me that was viewing him as kind of a kick returner only, but I was kind of okay, I gotta readjust after Heath shed some light on it.
Yeah, no, I mean, I think that's fair. I think that to an extent, they definitely need that guy, like you said, who can be a, you know, pass blocking, pass catching running back. I could be talking out of the side of my neck, but I believe that I saw some tweet go around where he was actually one of the higher graded pass blocking running backs in the draft, which I think could even go Yeah, beyond that, because, you know, looking at PFF last year, Travis Etienne had, for as much stake as you take at PFF grades, Travis Etienne had the highest PFF grade among the Jaguars, three running backs, and it still wasn't obviously a good one. So, and that's been one of the
pass blocking.
Yeah. And obviously that's been a big point in Etienne's game since he's came into Jax. It's just that, you know, he's not the best, you know, you'd say pass blocker. And you expect that with his, like, body type and play style and stuff. It definitely does seem like they have a lot of scat backs, plus Tank Bigsby. It feels like Tank, like, makes no sense, like, with the rest of the room, other than they just wanted somebody who can be, like, the cliche, you know, like, short yardage, power back, etc. Now, yeah. I'm with you. I also thought it was interesting. He said they think Keaton Robinson can play four different positions on special teams, which is obviously more than just the kick returner role. He said he's an elite kick returner. He's been doing punt returns. He can be a gunner, and he can be a corner on punt return, which he said he did some in college. So, I don't know, man. A fifth-round pick who can potentially add a semi-element to the offense, plus who can play pretty much every special teams unit. I mean, that's semi-valuable now.
Yeah, especially when we kind of were talking during the draft about how, like, after the fourth round, the Jaguars started, like, picking their favorite UDFA prospects, basically. And, like, it wasn't just a Jags thing. Like, people around the league were saying it was, like, a four-round draft or whatever. And so, yeah, to be able to get that on day three, I'm thinking about it more positively than I was at the time. The pick has grown on me.
So, speaking of Heath Farwell, he said the Jaguars more or less haven't gotten that far yet, but noted they will explore the possibility of maybe a non-kicker on kickoffs. I know the Chiefs have expressed that safety Justin Reed will do it for them. I think it's mainly because they expect more tackling on these returns, and you obviously don't want your kicker, one, to get hurt, or two, kickers can't really tackle. He mentioned Andre Sisko was somebody who had, like, more or less volunteered himself. Is there any way to identify who could actually, like, do that role? I think, like, a DB would make sense if you have somebody who can actually kick, you know, because they have the tackling, obviously.
Didn't Reed for the Chiefs, like, actually make an extra point in a game for them at one point? Like, I think he actually has, like, a history of having a good leg. I think Sisko, I mean, maybe he has a great leg and we just don't know it, but I think he more so just wants to be involved in any way that he can, because last offseason, Heath was talking about how Sisko, like, was coming up to him and just trying to get opportunities for punt return. And so that was one of the, I guess, just fun things to watch during training camp last year, was Andre Sisko being part of the kick return unit during, like, special teams drills. And so now I think he's like, all right, well, if I was training to be a returner, I can train to be a kicker too. And so I think he's just, like, a competitive ball player and just wants to be on the field as much as possible.
Yeah, evidently Reed kicked an extra point in the preseason game in 2022. It's a weird trade to have. I mean, the Texans had that running back last year who was with
Jare Ogunbowale, right?
Yeah, so, hey, man, could be anybody, man. I mean, imagine if Keelan Robinson could kick.
A fine special teamer.
I'd be a hell of a special teams player, man.
That would be so cool.
I'm saying right now, I'm letting the record show, if he ever attempts a kick in his Jaguars career, one, it was here first, and two, we deserve credit because it would show that
for the listening.
We give him the ideas. That's right.
Mark Long suggesting Logan Cook as the kicker was pretty glorious. He's like, but he can tackle, which
he can
tackle well for a punter, but, like, yeah, like, it's still kind of the same thing as a kicker. Like, you don't really want him risking injury on tackles, especially
it's got to be a defender.
Teamer they have too.
It's got to be like a defender or a tight end, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Brenton Strange. Come on, let's find a spot.
Josh Peterson.
He low key kind of has, like, a punter body.
You said it. Not me. One of my main other takeaways was Jarian Jones. He's been phenomenal.
Mm-hmm.
He's been all over the place. He had two plays on Monday. One where you can't tackle and can't make contact, but if you could, it was like a short, like, dump off to a tight end. He would have tackled him for a 1 yard gain, like at the very most, if it was, you know, live action. And then one of the last plays of the practice, he picks off Mac Jones, one of the only interceptions that we've seen really this entire OTA period. Obviously, there were, how many others?
The first interception we've seen?
He might have been. They had four OTA practices we didn't see, so I'm sure it's not the first one, but it's one of the first that we saw. And not to act like it was God's, you know, play or anything. It was wasn't the best toss over the middle, but I will say,
no.
And for the record, we can't say where he's been playing. I know everybody's been asking whenever I tweet about him. We can't say. I'm not going to risk the bag so that you can know the Jaguars' second team defensive depth chart. But I will say he's been all over the place. So in three OTA practices, he had four pass breakups and an interception. I know they talked ad nauseum at the owners' meetings about Darnell Savage playing the slot. I could see – I think Jones will be their second most impactful rookie after Brian Thomas Jr. I think if he's not starting week one, it takes maybe a month until he's in the lineup. He's just – he just looks like he belongs, which in my experience, very few rookie cornerbacks look even early in this stage of their career. Like, you know, compare him to fifth round of DeAndre Prince, and I'm not sure like where they're at right now. It's close. You know what I mean?
Yeah. The interception was pretty hilarious because Jones literally just stood there like the kid in the sandlot. I mean, he didn't have time even to say, please catch it, please catch it, please catch it, because it was only like a 10-yard throw. But I don't think he moved his feet at all once the ball was in the air. And so that was
great. After
it was more of a bad offense play than a good defense play. But even outside of that play, like, and still credits to him for being in the right spot at the right time, I guess. But like, he's been all over the place. Otherwise, and so it's not like I'm just taking away that one. But
does it get cold, Gus?
Hmm?
Does it get cold?
It's about to get cold.
Being a wet blanket.
Yeah, I just I thought the Sandlot thing was funny, so I would mention it. I wasn't even trying to take away from Jones. Like it's talking about how like it doesn't. It's not that big of a deal.
It was funny. It was a horrible.
It was funny. It absolutely was. The only other thing I had written down about Monday's OTAs was that Trey Flowers is a guy that I've been a little bit like pleasantly surprised by. He's definitely a like first guy off the bus type of signing, but he's been, I don't know, looking a little bit more agile and faster than I might have expected just because he's been in the league for a minute. And so I'll be interested to see. He's definitely not going to be like a full-time starter or anything like that, but I think he could end up being kind of an underrated free agent signing and maybe be like a little bit of a tight end stopper when they have tough matchups and, I don't know, just kind of like be a slot option for bigger matchups essentially. And then I'm sure he'll also have a pretty sizable role on special teams.
Them giving him 37 is foul, and I
will. Yep, that's fair.
I will not stand for it. It feels deliberate.
I was like, okay, Trey Herndon having the same offseason as Devin Lloyd, but nah.
Yeah, it feels pointed. It feels deliberate. I will sure. Agree with you. Yeah. He definitely stands out physically. That showed up, I think, on Monday more than any of the other practices. Trying to think what else. I saw a little bit from Brian Thomas Jr. that makes me feel more positive about his development in terms of like route running and stuff. He was going against DeAndre Prince, and again, no contact, but he showed a really – like, and this was in the red zone, showed a really impressive release, and then just – for how big he is, his body control, you know, during the route, you know, good break. He sold it as a vertical route. He had Prince more or less dusted. The ball didn't come his way, but just like seeing it up close and seeing how he can actually move and his body type, I was a little bit more convinced that, okay, maybe there's something to what they can tap into as a route runner.
I think he's had some really great flashes kind of coming off a line of scrimmage and being able to beat Prince right away. It's more so just that, like, he – was really just starting to flash in his third year of college. And so it's just something that they want to make a lot more consistent, but it's definitely there to work with. And so I'll be interested to see this year if like they make Gabe the X receiver and just have him always be on the line of scrimmage to create as many like easy or free releases for Brian Thomas as possible.
That's
or if I think that's probably what's going to happen, but it'll be interesting to see if like they kind of just throw him out there from week one and say, let's just kind of like learn on the go and really make you that primary X player.
Yeah, because I mean, the three biggest questions on him on his scouting report were, one, the routes. And that's not to say he was a bad route runner. He just didn't run like a diverse like route tree in that offense.
There's another consistency thing too.
Yeah, exactly. Two, his ability to play like against contact, which we can't see right now during OTAs, obviously. And then three, you know, his releases, you know, especially against, you know, press coverage and stuff. And I've definitely been encouraged, you know, from what I've seen, you know, in that regard. It's I really do think a big part of it too is just seeing like his body type plus his movement skills up in person. He's definitely had like a rare package in, you know, that regard. Something I think nobody else in their roster, you know, has, obviously.
Yeah. I mean, the same thing happened last year when Ridley was doing camp. Like, you would see a video from training camp of like the receivers doing a ladder drill, and Ridley literally looks like he did it twice as fast as anyone else. And so, like, he just moved at a different speed. And then it's kind of the same for Brian Thomas, where he just moves a little bit differently. And then, like, Ridley kind of had the same problem last year where he wasn't best against physical defenders. And I think that'll probably be the thing that takes Thomas Jr. the longest to grasp, I think, just because he's still a 21-year-old and still kind of growing into his body. And so it'll take a couple of years for him to, like, really fill out his frame and be as strong as he can be. It's not all going to happen as a rookie. But, yeah, he definitely moves different.
Yeah. Man, mini camp and training camp, Calvin Ridley. The Vince McMahon gift where he's just like, cut it.
Yeah. For real, man. That was some of the best football I've ever seen, even though like it wasn't real. It was the best surprising I've ever seen.
For the record, while we're talking about guys who've had impressive OTAs, I've seen guys have good OTAs and then completely disappear in training camp. I mean, there was one last year. Kevin Austin looked fantastic in OTAs, and then
I was going to mention from earlier when we were talking about like the bottom of the depth chart, I kind of miss seeing Kevin Austin out there.
I think he's in UFL right now. Pretty sure. He was our boy Justin Lewis's guy. So, you know, rest in peace. Don't get Justin attached to you, fellas. You will start dropping off this roster like five. Yeah, was A. Jones. Justin does fantastic work at the Times Union. Everybody should follow him. He's, in my opinion, one of the best journalists I know. So on that note, we're going to take a quick break for ads, and we will be right back. All right, so back to the topic of Brian Thomas Jr. Trevor Lawrence spoke after practice. He was, of course, asked about his new weapon, and he said something we've now heard like three or four times. And, you know, he praised what he's seen out of Brian Thomas Jr. in terms of like his football intelligence and stuff. I feel like the fact that we've seen that so many times, there has to be some wood or smoke, there's fire. So I think that definitely made an impression. And I will say, through these OTA practices, I mean, we've seen OTAs and mini camps where veterans have lined up wrong. And he definitely could be doing things wrong, and definitely probably has in the four practices we didn't see. But I can't remember many moments where Thomas has just like seemed like out of place, you know, where he looks like a rookie who's like swimming. Does that make sense?
Yeah, for sure. Excuse me. I think it'll be easier to kind of like parse between that starting in late July once the pads come on. But no, I don't disagree with that.
He also said he can fly, which hot take, you know. I think the two of them, like how quick their chemistry can get up to speed, can define how this offense like looks in the first half of the season. So it definitely looks like Trevor has been, you know, complimentary of Thomas. I really think him and Davis are more players better suited for Lawrence than guys like the Zay Joneses and, you know, Christian Kirk to an extent, Calvin Ridley. Like, obviously him and Kirk have a great relationship in terms of productivity, but I don't know, I just feel like the bigger receivers have always made more sense, you know, for Trevor, and now it seems like he actually has them. Davis, you know, he's still not doing team drills, but he flashes, I think, in the positional drills. He had one really nice grab, you know, on Monday. The ball was a little high. I think that just the two of them alone makes me feel like he maybe has an uptick this season. Because, I don't know, I just never felt like Zay Jones, Marvin Jones, those guys were fits with Trevor. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I think the bigger thing, honestly, than the size is definitely a big thing, no pun intended, but the speed more than anything, just because I think defenses were able to kind of squat on the Jags' offense for most of last year once Zay went down and, like, Ridley was their only – like, Ridley and Kirk can get open deep, but they're, like, it's more of, like, you draw up shot plays than, like, they're consistently just, like, beat – like, running past defenders or anything like that. And so really since DJ Chark got injured in week four of Trevor's rookie year, I feel like that was the last time they had like a field stretcher and someone they had to like, not that like they haven't had anyone on offense that opposing defenses didn't respect, but like specifically respect back deep, which opens up so much room. Like I feel like Brian Thomas and Gabe Davis, I'm expecting to have like pretty solid first seasons with the Jags, but I think just their presence alone is going to be the biggest help in like creating more room underneath for Kirk and ETN and Engram. And so I think, and then obviously like Trevor has a ridiculous arm and I think like his mental traits are as good as his physical traits, but like, it'll be nice to see like that arm actually finally fully utilized.
Yeah. And you see all the like deep passing stats and PFF stats and grades, big time throws, et cetera. It feels like Trevor is one of the best deep ball passers in football a year ago, where it's weird because both the structure of the offense from schematically and personnel wise was to, you know, not go deep. So it feels like now that he has receivers who can actually play to that, it's one of his better traits. That alone, I think, would make me optimistic for Trevor's season. Speaking of Trevor, him and Skinny Tua have both been asked in recent days about their
Skinny Tua?
Dude, he doesn't look real, man. He looks like a plant.
Is he that skinny?
Look a picture of him right now. Look up a picture of him right now.
Didn't he bulk
he up does not. He doesn't look like the same person. He looks. Okay. He looks like a plant. I've always thought Tua was a plant, and now I know Tua is a plant.
I feel like I saw a picture of him recently, and then I was like, no, that's not him.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh. He looks like his little brother now.
Yeah, he does.
Oh, man.
Yeah, so that said.
Okay, wow.
Trevor and Tiny Tua have both talked in recent days about their impending contract negotiations. It seems like Tua's conversation with reporters was a lot more terse and a lot more pointed in terms of his answers. He was like, I don't remember the exact quote. They asked him if he was feeling like upset or something. He was like, I'm not feeling that. I'm feeling a certain word. And that's obviously, like a subliminal.
Knock on razor.
Yeah. Whereas seeing Trevor, it felt like it was like the eighth time we've asked Trevor about the contract extension and like the 50th time we've asked somebody about it in the last few months. But that's what happens when you're openly saying every other week you're working on the deal, people are going to ask about it.
Right.
And Trevor more or less said, like, he's like, yeah, I would like to get this done. You know, he said sooner and later would be ideal, more or less. I'm interested in that from a player's perspective. If you were Trevor, like, if I'm the Jaguars, I'd want to do it now. I know some people have the idea of you want to see him produce more, et cetera, et cetera. I think what's the alternative? You know, I don't think the alternative makes any sense.
Price is only going to go up.
Yeah, so if I'm the Jaguars, I want to sign him now. But if you're Trevor, I kind of want to wait a year. Honestly, to see that press go up, but the fact that it seems like he's preferring like to do it now, I can't imagine that doesn't get done sooner and later. And I'm legitimately interested by his approach because it feels like a lot of quarterbacks when you see them say, you know, they like to get paid sooner and later, they're a lot closer to their contract expiring. Like Tua was in a completely different draft class than Trevor.
Yeah, I feel like for Trevor, it's just, I don't think it's really worth the security risk of like waiting all year, because like even if he got injured, like the Jaguars would still sign him to a new contract next offseason, I think. But like, I think like if he signs it now, then he's just going to be a year closer to getting his next deal. And so like, he's just pushing off not just this contract, but like his second and his third and maybe even his fourth contract down the road. And like, I feel like getting an extra like 5 or 10 million a year, like probably just like isn't really worth it for the security of like just being locked into a deal now and then being a year closer to your next contract. It just like I'm not surprised that like people have the argument of, oh, he should wait and try to like maximize his money. And like, cause we did kind of sort of see that with Josh Allen last year. Like, I don't know if the Jaguars ever officially offered him a contract or really was trying to start negotiations, but I think his camp was also like, it might make sense for us to kind of wait and like bet on ourselves. But like for the quarterback market is just totally different. And I think like it makes a lot of sense for both sides to want to get a done deal as soon as possible. And so I think that's more so where Trevor's head is at, rather than like, oh, I want to get a deal done before training camp because I don't want it to be a distraction or anything like that. Like, that might be true, but I don't think that's like what he's worried about.
Those are all good points, Gus. I hate you for making them. That's well said. Hoisted by my own petard. Okay. All right. I'm going to throw out four names. You tell me which Jaguar signs the biggest contract this upcoming offseason. All right. Cam Robinson, Walker Little, Andre Sisco, Tyson Campbell. Is it tight?
I forgot to mute myself before that one.
Sisco?
Tyson Campbell. What did you say? Tyson Campbell.
I say Sisco. Yeah, I say Sisco.
Okay, make your case. I'll be right back.
Okay. All right. I am making my case, Gus. Yeah, Gus is scurrying away. I don't know. I just feel like the way the safety market's going, he definitely has, a lot of ball production in the last couple of years. Even if it feels like he was inconsistent last year, like he has some of the most production of any of the players in the back seven. And I don't know. I feel like safeties are getting paid maybe a higher rate as playmakers than cornerbacks are, you know, right now. Gus has returned for those on video, I guess. I miss you.
I told you I was sick, man. I'm just dealing.
Yeah, you look like I'll be frank, you look like you're dying. You're a trooper for being a part of this.
So I think that's fair. It's more so just that like I think that like quarterbacks make more money than safeties do, and I think that I also think that Tyson is probably a little bit of a better player than Sisco. Definitely love both of them, but I don't know. I definitely could also see like them having like a similar caliber of season, but then Andre Sisco having like 5 more interceptions and 6 more pass deflections, and then that like makes a pretty big difference in contract negotiations. But I think they might be not opposed to just like shelling out money to keep Tyson Campbell, because I know we've talked about like the possibility of them letting him walk and then drafting his immediate replacement in the first round next year's draft, because that's kind of the trend that the Jags have been on. But I also wouldn't be surprised if they were like, nah, Ronald Darby, even if he has a good season, like he's on the wrong side of 30. And if none of the younger guys are developing the way they want, maybe they think it's worth dropping a bag in order to keep Tyson in town. And so like Walker Little, I feel like isn't going to be on the team next year. And then I don't know, Cam Robinson's might be a sneaky good one.
Yeah, I'm with you. All right. A few other Jaguars quick hitters before we get out of here and let Gus get to either the doctor or the morgue. This is his choice. I will say, if you die, I know a great local family business that will take care of you and all of your afterlife needs.
All right. I'll let my people know.
They'd make you look terrific. I'll say
probably better than I look right now.
Yeah, well, no comment. With that said, moving forward, the Jaguars, the quick hitters rank 5th in available. I'm sorry.
No, it's fine.
I was trying to bring that smile back. They rank 5th in available cap space after post June 1st cap was estimated at $34.1 million, as made obvious after they released Zay Jones. He wasn't a push June 1st guy. That makes sense. They just wanted to get out of that contract, more or less. With that said, they currently rank 18th in 2025 cap with $21.9 million. Obviously, their cap will go up because of the cap increase that happens every year. Doesn't really change the ranking, but that could be another reason they want to get Trevor done a year earlier, you know, free up some money for next year, because they definitely do have a lot of money already tied into next year between guys they just signed and guys who they're still on the hook for in terms of dead money. Obviously, you just signed Josh Allen. So they might have to get, you know, semi-creative. Otherwise, the former Jaguars owner, founding owner, Wayne Weaver, expressed his approval for the new stadium, you know, renovations. I think that's fairly important, like, to see, you know, the past Jaguars lineage and the person who saw the first vision of the Jaguars playing in Jacksonville to look, and somebody who's still respected around the city to look at this plan and speak unequivocally, you know, how much he supports it. The vote's later this month. You can find a timeline of the Jaguars' proposed renovations on, you know, Jaguar Report. It's out there, other outlets as well, where, you know, they talk about how many years they'll play in Jacksonville, how many years they'll play out of Jacksonville, just the one, plus reduced capacity, stuff like that. Gus, is there anything else you can think of from OTAs before we come back next week in the middle of a good old veteran / quote-unquote rookie minicamp?
No, I was just going to kind of reiterate your point. And I feel like the Jags being fifth in cap space is more in terms of what they could do with that. I think it makes a lot more sense to just try to devote a decent amount of money in 2024 to Trevor Lawrence's contract and maybe try front-loading it a little bit while you have the money. Maybe not front-load it, but just like put a little bit more into year one. Front-loading is probably not the right term, but I think it makes more sense to use that money for Trevor Lawrence than it does for like a splashy veteran or like a free agent. I think they're probably done, if I had to guess, with free agency. But if they did make another move, I bet it'd be like adding that minimum guy like Trey Flowers or something like that.
I think if they add anybody, it's like a 1-year deal. So even if it's a couple million, you know, it's a 1-way deal.
Right.
I will say, it does give them the flexibility if they want to take a shot. They got 9 draft picks next year, including 6 in the first 4 rounds. That's attractive on its own, plus the cap space. If they wanted to take a swing, I think that they at least have the opportunity to.
I think that's fair. I'm just saying, in terms of what I expect to happen, like,
yeah,
just give it to Trevor.
Yeah, fair enough.
All right, my last thing is just movie recommendations. Because last night I watched Moneyball. It held up pretty well. I was like, let me just throw on like a dumb sports movie to just like get me until bedtime and then I can pass out. But it actually, like, it was a pretty solid movie, not just like a movie for sports nerds. So it held up pretty well. But if you have any other movie recommendations for sick people, so just like easy watches, yeah. Let us know in the comments. I'd appreciate it.
The movie that ruined the running back position forever. It is a good movie though. I love Jonah Hill in that movie. I miss fat Jonah Hill. I don't like skinny Jonah Hill.
Yeah.
With that said, follow me on Letterboxd, Gus. John Shipley, no space. I'll give you all the ones.
All right. Maybe I should. I probably should do that. I haven't downloaded it. You'll be my movie.
I watched the Planet of the Apes, the new trilogy, to prepare me for the fourth one. You interested in those? They're all on Hulu. They're all three of them are good movies.
What was the best one? If I only watched one, which one should I watch?
Probably the second one, but you can't watch the second one without watching the first one. You have to watch at least the first one. The first one's good.
Okay. Then maybe that'll be my plan for today. I'll watch the first two and then decide if I want to watch the third.
All right. The second Hellboy is pretty good.
Sounds scary. Not a big horror movie guy.
There was a movie on Amazon called 7 Days in Utopia about golf that I ranked 1 star.
Perfect. That sounds like a good sick day movie.
Me, Earl, and the Dying Girl. 3.5 stars. I cried during it. I'm not kidding.
I was about to ask you, like, how often do you cry during movies? I probably
not often, but you know what? Go ahead and watch that movie and tell me it's not sad. I challenge you. So not often. Normally there's a dog dying if I'm crying during a movie.
Pretty much. At least someone's dying.
Have you ever watched Marley and Me?
Oh, yeah. You know, I haven't actually. I have a funny story about that. After my sister and I's, like, first family dog passed away when we were, like, 8 or 9, we decided it would be a good idea to watch Marley and Me. And it was a horrific idea. We were just crying for like 24 hours straight, my sister and I.
I love traumatic childhood moments.
Yeah, that was definitely up there. And that was the only time I've seen Marley and Me. But maybe I'll give it another go. I'll report back next pod on what I've watched other than Moneyball.
I also want you to watch the Pop-Tart movie on Netflix with Jerry Seinfeld.
I already did it. It's terrible.
1.5 stars, baby.
Yeah, you see, I saw it too. Yeah, it was. I was like, is this a kid movie or an adult movie? It was just like so weirdly slow.
Yeah, it was something. All right. On that note, we'll be back next Wednesday to talk about the most useless 3 days in the Jags Wars football calendar. Until then, I'm John Shipley. He is Gus the Iron Lung Logue. This is the Jaguar Report Podcast. You got Logue Bald. Be well. Make sure you subscribe on YouTube, my friends. We hit 500 since our last episode. Our next goal is 1,000. Let's see if the heck we can get there. We're also offering, you know, some memberships. You know, you can get, you know, live chats, videos, stuff like that. I've thought about doing like a live mailbag each week, you know, with members if we get enough. So
that'd be cool.
Interested in doing that. You know where to find us. You also get a priority comment. So anybody who wants to make fun of Gus, you can get me to laugh at it right away. So with that said,
yippee.
Yep. I'm John with my friend Gus Logue, Jaguar Report Podcast, and we will be back next week. Thank you for joining us.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week, and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply. When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week, and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.